Welcome to Talking Dynasty with Garrett Price and Jared Wackerly with DynastyNerds.com, where we discuss game theory, Dynasty fantasy football strategy, and interview different analysts from around the Dynasty fantasy football space. We appreciate you tuning in. Now let's get to work.
Welcome back to Talkin' Dynasty. My name is Garrett Price, and I'm here joined by my lovely co-host, Jared Wackerly. Jared, how's it going, buddy?
Going good, dude. Just grinding through this rookie tape.
Absolutely. It is definitely grinding season when it comes to us tape people, that's for sure. We have a really cool show today. Different, a little different than some of the other things that we've done in the past. But you're going to get Jared and I solo for the beginning of the show. And then towards the end of the show, we actually did an interview with someone real special. I'm not gonna reveal who yet. You probably see it in the show notes and you know right away, but that doesn't matter. Pretend like you don't know. It's a secret until the end. But before that, Jared and I are going to talk about some of the things that go into our nerd score, because our nerd score show is coming up. We're going to be releasing the nerd score within the next few weeks here. And we thought we would talk a little bit about our scouting process looking at these players. So, Jared, is there a specific position you want to start with, either running back or wide receiver?
You pick. Dealer's choice.
Ooh, we're in the midst of wide receiver right now, so let's do wide receiver. We'll talk some wide receiver tape, and then we'll talk. Running back's my favorite anyway, so we'll save the best for last. But we'll talk wide receiver first. So, Jared, let me paint a picture. Let me become Picasso for a second. Bust out my paintbrush. All right? You're sitting down.
You are.
That's right. Wow. That was deep. all right. So you're sitting down after a long day. You got work done today. Kids were crazy. And you just ate and finally got the kids to bed, and you got probably a little spit up on you because you got a young one. And you finally sit down and you get to watch some tape, and you click on a guy like whoever it is, Xavier Worthy, or you click on a guy like Romo Dunze, or whoever it is. What's the first thing going through your brain when you sit down and watch these guys?
Hey, Dynasty Nerds, it's time to take your Dynasty game to the next level with FFPC's Dynasty Startup Leagues. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, FFPC has a league for you, with entry fees ranging from $100 up to $5,000. Choose from a variety of formats, including Superflex, Best Ball Superflex, Triflex, 1QB, and Standard. With weekly lineups, waivers, trades, head-to-head matchups, and playoffs, FFPC's fully managed leagues provide the ultimate dynasty experience. Most importantly, the leagues are here to stay. FFPC has never had a dynasty league fold. They manage the entire commissioner experience, from buy-in management to fulfilling your orphans. FFPC is perfect place to expand your dynasty league portfolio. And here's the best part. As Dynasty Nerds listener, you can get $25 off any entry fee as a new member when you use the promo code NERDS. Head over to myffpc.com now to draft your team, manage your roster, and dominate your league with FFPC. That's myffpc.com. Promo code NERDS for $25 off any entry fee for new members. FFPC, where dynasty dreams become a reality.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, I'll make a note for them inside like my note taking system that I use. I have a whole system built out. You know me with these apps and stuff.
I've never met a person that has more subscriptions to more platforms and services ever. I avoid them like the plague. And Jared's like, oh well, you know, this one's only like $800 for the month. I'm gonna try it.
not that expensive. Right it's now, I'm not. Using an app that's called Tana. But of course. It's like, I like efficiency. So, like, you know, I plug them into my system. It like, auto-populates all these fields that I want to fill in for these guys. And then later I can go back and view all these different things that I, in notes that I've taken on these players. But anyway, I mean, specifically wide receiver, you know, I'll go to our film room, obviously, and I will pull up all the games that we have on them. And I'll just start watching the first one. Like, I don't go over to, like, Sports Reference and see, like, which game they had the best game, which game was their worst game. I do that eventually, but, like,
I do as well.
Off the rip, like, I just want to get a feel for who this guy is on the field. Like, how does he move? You know, how does their offense play? Yeah, like, just how he moves on the field. Like, does he line up in a slot? Does he line up outside? Just that kind of stuff, especially for the guys that I'm not too familiar with, like Anthony Gold out of Oregon State. Just watched him. We broke him down on the podcast this past week. And once I do that, then I start, you know, looking to see who their opponents were. Was there a cornerback that he was going against that's possibly going to get drafted? Was this his best game? Was it his worst game statistically? And then I start looking into, like, which games did he get the most volume in? Because I want to get as many repetitions on that player as I can. Not just, like, most receiving yards and stuff, like, most targets. Like, I want to see volume and repetition. And then, you know, we can get into, like, the grading process. But I want to get at least 4 games before plugging in any grades for them. But I'm just sitting there taking notes, like, how I feel his strengths are, what his weaknesses are, anything that I can find. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, you did a fantastic job of highlighting kind of all the little things. The only thing that I think of that you didn't mention necessarily is I like to see college injury reports. And so I try to look up, like, was there any time where this guy was injured during some of the games that I might be watching that might influence me one way or another to think, oh, this guy's running a little slow. And, well, yeah, he has a hurt ankle. Of course he's running a little slow.
What do you use for that?
I literally just Google the guy and injury and see what pops up. So I wish I had a good service for it, but I haven't found one that's consistent.
If anyone out there has a reliable place to find college injuries, because, I mean, it's such a, you know, they're undisclosed in college, so it's, like, hard to find tangible things. But it no, that's a good point.
Especially small, like, school guys.
It's a good point. I mean, what year was it? We realized the guy we were grading,
Claypool,
was Claypool. Yeah, he was hurt. Like, every game we had in the film room, like, he was injured or something.
We still got the grade right, though. We still got the grade right.
Dude, he's still my lowest graded receiver, which, in hindsight, that's probably wrong.
Honestly, but I thought about it before. I almost want to, like, put some sort of highlight system for the first year class because we had nothing to compare it to. So, like, now looking back, I'm like, I would have had T. Higgins higher. I would have had Justin Jefferson higher. I would have, like,
sure.
But it was such a good receiver class that it was like, well, all these guys can't be 75s and above. Like, there's no way that I can have 6-7 guys that high. No, we could. That class was really that good. We just had nothing to compare it to. So I almost want to go back and, like, just put some sort of, like, asterisk because I don't want to take it down because it's part of the lore and it is what it is. But I almost want to have, like, some sort of asterisk towards that.
I think people can understand, like, that was our first year doing this. Not that we didn't watch tape beforehand, but, like, we hadn't really graded any. We haven't really graded our guys or, like, our process. And that was our first year. And just like anything, you get better over time. So the fact Claypool is still my lowest grade, though, is just, that's just wrong. I mean, I'll admit that. Like, that's not, that shouldn't be the case.
It's kind of funny, though. I hope you never have one lower.
It is.
Oh, man.
That's a good point. Like, finding if a player was injured or not, that's really good context when watching film. You know, they have a bad ankle that they're trying to run on. Is that why they're showing up so slow?
Right.
Stuff like that for sure is helpful.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's get into the actual scouting process now of these guys. There's some things that weigh a little more heavily for me than other things do. And I don't know if it's the same way for you, Jared. And sometimes it's based on the type of player it is. You know, if this is a guy where, I look, he's a big-bodied guy, probably going to be a traditional X receiver. Maybe he'll be a Z. Maybe he's just a deep threat guy. But there's certain things that I want to see out of those guys that I might be a little more gracious towards slot guys and vice versa, where I might be a little more nitpicky on the slot guys for certain things than I would be for X receivers. But ultimately, at the end of the day, if I had to boil it all down to what I would consider the most significant thing that I'm looking for, it's ball skills. Like, at the end of the day, it's ball skills. And some will hear that and say, what are you laughing at?
I don't know. I'm just
You're being raunchy over
it
here.
It was just, no, I'm not. It's just like, ball skills. Like,
Look, like, I was trying to do it for my head. Opus clip later will take that, and it was going to be great, and now you ruined it.
Number one thing I'm concerned with is ball skills.
Ball skills. I really am, though.
I don't know why. In my head, I was just cracking up.
That really is a thing for me, though. And some people will hear that and just assume, like, okay, does he catch the ball well or not? No. And in fact, at times, I'm not even overly concerned if they have some drops and things like that. Like, that's not the end of the world to me. What I mean by this is, what is their process leading up to and catching the football and then immediately after? So if can they get decent separation? Okay. So that prepares them to catch the football, because if you don't have good separation, it's tough. Now, some guys are more jump ball guys, and that is what it is, but how are they at getting separation? Okay, so if they're a guy that gets separation and that's their game, how do they do with that? Then I'm looking at, okay, once the ball's thrown, what are they doing? Okay, I'm watching them and the defender. Are they a guy that immediately telegraphs that the ball is coming their way? Or is it a guy that has late hands and can adjust real quickly? How is their body adjusting to the football? I think that's huge as far as like tracking the ball, because some guys track the ball really, really well. And they put their body in the optimal position to be able to catch that pass. Other guys don't do a great job of that. Some guys really have a hard time gauging how much they need to speed up, slow down, turn. Like, it's a nuance, and I wish I could say, like, here's a measurable thing to do. It's something that you just learn to kind of see over time, but it's really important. So how do they adjust their body up into that? Then when they jump, are they able to, if it's a contested catch, are they able to box out their defender? Or are they allowing their defender to get into their body? Are they high pointing the football? Are they catching it at the optimal spot? Are they a hands catcher? Or are they a body catcher? Are they, like, all of these things. And then once they actually make the catch, how strong are their hands? Because there are guys that can catch the ball real well, but a DB can easily come across the arms and knock it out every time. Are they able, you know, and that's the difference between catching on air and catching against a defender. And so how do they do catching the ball, bringing it down? And that kind of completes the process for me. But that whole process there is huge for me really believing whether or not a player is a good receiver or not. Because if you look at almost all of the receivers that we have in football right now, you look at the top tier guys that we've had for a long time, the Justin Jeffersons, the CeeDee Lambs, Devontae Adams, Cooper Kupp. Yes, all of these guys, fantastic ball skills. The only top receivers that I would say do not have above average ball skills are Tyreek Hill and DK Metcalf. Those are the only ones.
Dude, and I literally both just think the same two guys.
Yeah, and they're complete outliers. They're both physical freaks in different ways. So those are really the only two guys.
I'm sure those guys were missing.
I'm sure there are. There might be one or two, but if you look at it, a vast, vast majority are excellent when it comes to ball skills.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you, and you hit the nail on the head. And we talked about it earlier this week on the main podcast, the Dynasty Nerds podcast, about how when David Zach, whom we've had on the show, and he's a good friend of ours that writes at Dynasty Nerds, and he is fully entangled with our process at this point with the Nerd Score. And he provides us, like, how does our Nerd Score correlate to fantasy success? And he provided the numbers to us, and body control was surprisingly one of the top things. And that plays into the whole ball skills
process. Yep.
Yeah. Ball skills.
Ball skills.
That whole, I don't even know what you want to call it. Like, it's a big part of that. So yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I don't really have much to add to that. We didn't even get it. Like, that's the physical that you can see and that you can judge and you can grade. That's the physical part of playing the receiver. Like, we didn't even get into, like, the heady part that we can look at. You know, are they aware of a hot route or a blitz? Like, if there's a zero blitz coming, do they understand what the defense is trying to do and help out their quarterback? And we'll get into a hot route and get open quickly against that. I mean, some offenses don't really have that built in college, but most do and most should. Do they see those type of things? Are they able to understand if it's zone versus man? Do they understand playing into the DB's leverage to help them win in their route? Just a lot of little nuanced things that you pick up over time, either playing the game like you and I did. I mean, we've had so much repetition, and there are so many other people that have played the game, but it's a repetition thing. And if you don't have it, you may not be able to see it, but I think you can learn it. So understanding those little things can really help you in your wide receiver grades. I know it's something that I look for sure. And you were talking about it with Ladd McConkey this week.
Yeah, absolutely. That heady part of the game, that mental part of the game, it's just different for some guys than it is for others. And you can see that. So that's some of the process. And obviously we're looking at release. We're looking at their quickness and their burst. And, like, we're looking for all those things. But that's the thing that I really wanted to highlight out of all of this was kind of that ball skills.
That's what I'm gonna drop that just says ball skills.
we probably do.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey guys, let me tell you about our friends at Sleeper. Guess what? Our app is the mini is live. Woo. On Sleeper right now. The Dynasty GM, pretty. You use the analyzer, that you can use nice. the trade calculator. And my favorite thing is the inbox, right? Where all your trades from all your Sleeper leagues are right there. You can actually push trades through the actual Sleeper app. And right now we couldn't be more excited to be partners with them. And right now, if you don't know, they are doing DFS. And I know how many people that play Dynasty play DFS as well. And right now there's not a better place to play DFS than Sleeper. They're offering up to 100 times your entry, the highest payout in the whole DFS market right now. You can track your fantasy players and your Sleeper picks in real time. All you gotta do is choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players from pregame, live in-game, or even across different sports. Pick more or less than the predicted stats, and only on Sleeper you can get up to 100 times your payout. You can share with your friends and get rewarded together. Make sure you use that promo code NERD so our friends know that friends sent them their way. Ooh. And get your deposit match and friendly. Have a good time. You know, have all your DFS, all of your fantasy leagues, and now even a Dynasty GM in one spot is fully operational inside Sleeper right now. And then when you're a Nerd Herd member, you get that full access to that. And remember, you also want to download the Dynasty Nerds app because they're both in there. Check it out. Check our friend Sleeper. Check out a DFS. Use that promo code NERDS.
Get your whole estate
set. All right, so we hit on wide receivers and our process. And, I mean, we're going to go more in depth when we release our Nerd Scores. We'll probably do another live event on our YouTube channel. And we'll make sure to try to put that out in podcast form. Actually, I'm not sure on that because it is a Nerd Herd feature, and you know, we don't want to spoil that. So
yeah, and we only give away so much on that episode. We don't give away everything. So there's things that non-Nerd Herders won't be able to hear. We won't talk about on the show. So maybe there are things. So, we'll see.
But let's talk about running backs. Same deal. Like what? I mean, you played running back, so maybe let's start with you and your process. So like you've got, you don't have spit up on your shoulder anymore, but you know, Denise is in bed, the kids are in bed, it's just you, 10 p.m. and you don't drink bourbon like me, but you're ready, you're sitting down. What do you do when you watch film? You got a drink? You got something? Like what? Put your feet up. Where are you at in the house?
Usually I'm in my office. I am usually in my office. Usually I'll have like something on. I have a TV right here off to the side. So I'll have like something going, either like a basketball game or something like that. Or if there's nothing really on, or if I just don't care, it'll be like Bob's Burgers or something like that. I'll have something like that over here. And then usually sweatpants are the go-to. I'm usually rocking. Or maybe no pants. It might just be boxer briefs, yeah.
Oh, man. That's Tajay Spears tape.
Well, that was a whole different experience. But yeah, so a lot of the things that you said, kind of all of the background, little nuanced things, want to check all that out. So yeah, I'll turn on the tape, and depending on the type of guy, it might be a little bit different on the things that I value a little bit more, matter a little bit more to me. But the thing that I'm really looking for with running backs is twofold, where it's really that one big thing in wide receiver. For me, it's a little bit more twofold at running back. One, I want to see vision. If a guy doesn't at least have average vision, I'm out. Like, running back is too small of a window as it is. I can't be taking years off for this guy to learn this at the NFL level. At this point, if you don't have decent vision, it's probably too late for you. So if a guy doesn't at least have average vision, and the way we do this is we watch all 22 tape. I'm a firm believer, I've said this before, I don't think you can adequately judge a running back's vision without all 22 tape. I really don't think so.
Specifically running back.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's arguably the most important position to have the all 22 on.
Quarterback, but.
Quarterback as well, but we'll talk about how we feel about quarterback in a moment when we get to our special guest. But all of that being said, vision is a real big thing for me. And then the ability to be able to break tackles. Now, I'm defining that a little bit more loosely than some other people will define that, because I don't necessarily see that as a one size fits all. There are some guys that have incredible power and they will break tackles with power. There are other guys that have the ability to make guys miss in the open field. And I'm good with that. There are some guys that make juke moves, or some guys that are just faster and understand angles. However you do it, making the defense wrong, like making the defense not have the ability to make the play. And so I know that is a little bit open-ended, but I've loved Javonte Williams and I've loved Tajay Spears, two very different running backs, very different running backs.
Very similar though with knee injuries. Sorry, I love hitting that.
You suck.
It's every single true, time. Though.
Trey Benson, RB1, knee injuries.
Oh my gosh.
All right. All that being said, I want somebody that's going to make the defender wrong. And if you can do that and you have good vision, there's a good chance you can be a successful running back at the next level.
Yeah. No, I love that. I'm similar in that way. And I think a common phrase people like to use is making the first guy miss. That's a key trait that I look for. I think in this class, like Marshawn Lloyd is the epitome of that. There's not many times where I see that first guy bring him down. And when they're in the open field in a one-on-one situation, they better not get tackled. Like if you're going to be a good back in the NFL, you better be able to make a one-on-one situation in your favor. So I like that, Garrett. Another thing that I like to look for is like how good are they at like controlling their body and making their body hard to hit and hard to tackle and like setting themselves up to keep their feet. Like there are guys that don't understand that or can't do that physically. But then there's guys like Alvin Kamara, or I thought Devon Achane was really good at this. Like they can anticipate where they're going to be hit and they prepare their body and they're able to move in a way to when they do get hit, they're able to kind of keep their feet and keep their balance. So that all kind of plays into the contact balance side of thing. Balance is so important for running backs. Keeping your feet moving and always trying to move forward. You know, as when you're a young kid learning to play the game, like your coaches are always telling you to like keep chopping those feet, like keep those feet moving.
That's true.
And it's funny how many guys don't do that even in college. Like it's
true.
Anyway, I mean, where am I going with this? I think burst is extremely important. You know, it's not top end speed, but it's how quickly you can get to your top end speed and hit that hole. And then, I mean, when guys are going to the NFL, I am looking for size. Size is so important at the running back position, in my opinion. Yes, there are outliers like an Achane. Like that guy was just different in other ways where I thought he could succeed in the right place, and he happened to land in a perfect spot in Miami.
Perfect spot.
Yeah. So you're going to have outliers, but most of the time, if you're undersized, I may write you off quicker than you know, someone that's not. I'm probably going to give a bigger guy a little more chance.
No, I think that's absolutely fair. So those are our thoughts on the running back, the wide receiver position, just some of the basic things that we do when we're kind of looking at the scouting process. We'll get into a little bit more nuanced things during the Nerd Score episode, most likely. But we were going to talk about quarterback, and obviously Jared is a former college quarterback, and we say that like jokingly, but seriously, like he does understand things differently than other people do. But we decided to take it up even another level. We brought on Kurt Benkert, former NFL quarterback, former Division I quarterback, played at both Eastern Carolina and Virginia, and then he played for, I think I'm getting into this right, Packers, the Falcons. Niners, and the Falcons.
I think so. We hit a couple of them. I don't know about the Niners, but I think you're right.
Okay. Either way, we brought him on because we wanted to talk about what it's like for him to scout the quarterback position and what should we be learning from him and what should we be doing when we're scouting the quarterback. So when we're looking at Caleb Williams, at Drake May, at Spencer Rattler, at whoever we're watching, what are the things that we should be keeping an eye on that are going to lead both to NFL success and fantasy football success? So let's get to that interview. We've got an extra special guest. We've got a former Division I quarterback. We've got a former NFL quarterback. Same guy, it's not two separate quarterbacks. Former NFL quarterback and current podcast host, which I'm excited to hear about, Kurt Benkert. Kurt, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. Excited to be on the show, guys.
Absolutely. Well, Kurt, if the folks aren't familiar with you, which they should be, but if they're not, give them a quick little rundown who you are and why we're so excited to talk to you about quarterbacks.
Yeah, so my name is Kurt, clearly. I've played in the NFL for 5 years with the Falcons, Packers, and 49ers. Throughout that time, I've had some swings and turns in my career and did a lot in social media and gaming. By year two, I had a really big injury, and I started diving into that world, a world that I explored a lot when I was a kid, and kind of just pivoted away from football, and now I'm doing media and gaming full-time after playing. So it's been a wild run to where it is now, but you might have seen me memeing around on Twitter, or you've seen some of the breakdowns I do on YouTube or Madden games as well. So I do a lot all over the place.
Awesome, awesome. And you have a podcast on the Sleeper platform that you do as well, right?
Yes. So I run Pocket Presence powered by Sleeper, where basically we bring in just different insight into what's going on in today's NFL, try to bring my experiences, my analysis and everything, and just display it in whatever media form makes sense for that week. Right now, we're doing a lot of breakdowns for the college quarterbacks, so those are more film breakdowns than podcasts, but we do have podcast episodes where we bring in guests, do analysis, kind of case studies. We did one recently on the Atlanta Falcons and just kind of their whole situation. So every episode's a little bit different, but we try to just kind of push media forward and bring insight.
That's awesome. Well, I don't know if you know this, but we have a former Division I quarterback with us as well. Jared Wackerly.
Let's go.
Played ball at Akron. I was just linebacker, so you know I didn't have much to offer here. But we have another quarterback on the show, so you're not alone here.
Sweet. So you know what it takes.
I know what it takes, but you took it even further, and I'm really interested to hear your experience and how you apply it to breaking down these quarterbacks coming out. Because, I mean, as we all know, quarterback, it's so much of it is played between the ears and how those guys are coached. And us from the couch and from our computers, like, we don't know what these guys are being told in their coaches' rooms. And, you know, we don't know what their actual reads are. So for me, it's like, for fantasy purposes, it's like I always fall back on draft capital, even though I have the experience of playing.
Yeah.
Not to the extent that you did. But I'm just interested to see how, like, you're going about it now that you're out of the league and doing this from, like, a media standpoint and how you look at it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, if you want, we can get into it right now, or we can...
Let's do it. Yeah, yeah, cool. let's get right into it.
Let's get right in, man.
Yeah, so I would say when I'm looking at quarterbacks, the first thing that I'm looking at is, like, what is their process before the ball is thrown? So what's their footwork look like? What's their pre-snap? Like, what are they looking at? What's their demeanor? Are they checking things at the line? Like, I try to get, like, a broad stroke of, okay, who are they before they have to, like, be a quarterback and throw the ball? And so I'm looking at footwork. I'm looking at, like, the route concepts that they're being asked to read out. Because a lot of times it's like you have a guy that on paper in a West Coast system, and that's a disclaimer. Everything that I am saying is from my experience in a West Coast system in the NFL. I played every year in a West Coast. And then in college, I played in Air Raid. So I know the two extremes of it and how vastly different the quarterback operation is and what they ask you to do in the NFL and what was never even spoken about in college. Decision making, yeah, but like timing was not really a big thing. Like anticipation wasn't a big thing in college. Where in the NFL, like, I know you're going to be asked to do those things. And I think that's where the biggest, I think that's the hardest thing to grade about quarterbacks right now. It's you don't really know what they're being asked to do. You can kind of get an idea based on what tree of coaching they're in college. But when they get to the NFL, it all depends on where are they going? What's the situation? What's the quarterback in front of them going to look like? Is he an older guy that's going to be teaching them? Is he a young guy that doesn't know all of the nuances that take years and years to learn? And so I look at all these different things when I put on a piece of film. And that's where I've gotten to some of the conclusions that I have with guys like Drake May, where I think he could benefit from a Patrick Mahomes rookie year where he sits behind somebody. And then a guy like Jaden Daniels, where I'm like, his feet are really good. He can throw from a tight, narrow base. He doesn't need to overstride. So that tells me he can throw with a tight pocket. And there's just, I don't know, there's little nuances and things that I've accumulated from being around Hall of Fame quarterbacks and being around really, really good coaches that'll probably be Hall of Fame coaches. And I just know what they expect and what they ask of you in, like, a vacuum. And then everything you can do outside of that vacuum, that's a plus. But I don't think you can play sustained quarterback play in the NFL without playing in the vacuum first. I think that stuff's hard to do. So
no, that makes absolute perfect sense. And if you were to say, okay, your fantasy football guys, obviously we are looking at it through a slightly different lens than maybe other people, but we still want to be able to have some good concepts and good understandings of what these quarterbacks are doing, what they're being asked to do. So for the casual fan that's sitting down and they're, you know, they're watching Caleb Williams tape today and they're like, what the heck should I be looking for to even have a chance to understand whether or not I should draft this guy or not?
Yeah. So I would look at his feet first and foremost. I think, like, every good quarterback, it starts with your feet. And I don't care who you are, even though there's a bunch of different types of footworks to use, as long as your footwork is matching up with your route concept, I think that is a big indicator, and that leads to anticipation. Because if you don't have anticipation and you're waiting for guys to get open, that's a hard thing to figure out in year one of the NFL while there's all these other moving pieces that you have to process. I think you revert back to what you're used to doing if you don't throw with anticipation. So when I'm watching guys and when you guys are watching guys, like, what route is called and what does this footwork look like to match up with the timing of that route? So is it a stick route? It's a left, right plant through the ball, or some guys it's a step slide, but the ball should be coming out as the guys are turning or as they're about to flash their hands. And I think over the course of time, how many times is that quarterback that you're watching throwing the anticipation before the guy's open or as he's coming open instead of seeing him? Because I think if you have a guy that's just watching guys waiting for them to come open and trying to just rip it in there with a strong arm, when he has to worry about a formation, a shift, a motion, pre-snap, post-snap reads, audible and protection, like all that stuff, he's not going to be also anticipating throws in year one, in my opinion. Most guys would not be doing that. And that's why I was so high on CJ Stroud last year. The way that he played in college, he was not like the best college football player, but he played in a way that would translate to the NFL really well. And he got lucky, let's be honest, to be with a system like Bobby Slowick coming from San Francisco. He had some dog receivers, both in college and in the NFL. Those guys, nobody was talking about Nico Collins and Tank Dell as much as they were, but they're really good receivers. They played so well last year. And CJ Stroud played lights out too. And so I saw parts of his game in college and I'm like, okay, I don't really care about the wow plays, breaking tackles, scrambling, ripping touchdowns. Like, how well can he play consistently within the framework of the game that can translate to the NFL? And that's how he played 90% of his college football. And I'm looking at guys like Michael Penix too. Michael Penix just ran a 4.4, but like he only had 2 yards average rush, like carries. Like he didn't really run the ball a whole lot in college. Right. He can translate really well early into the NFL because of what he was asked to do. He made more NFL type throws than anybody in college football this year, in my opinion. And he didn't need it or rely on it that he was a better athlete. He did it from the pocket. And that translates. Because these DNs are freaks, dude. Like, you have some of these guys in the league, you're not going to make them miss and make them look silly like you did in college. Jaden Daniels is the only guy that I think is going to do that somewhat consistently. Like, maybe.
Yeah, and if your first out versus pressure is to use your feet, like a Caleb Williams or Drake May, not saying they do that every time, like, they're going to get in trouble at the next level. I mean, you talked about footwork a lot, and that's like one of the things you really key in on. And it's something that you can look at just in a vacuum without having to know like the system and things like that and evaluate it. Is there anyone from this class that gave you some pause when it comes to their footwork and the way that they were navigating the pocket?
Yeah, so I'll play both sides of that. I looked at Caleb Williams and Drake May, and I thought that their footwork was like subpar. And Caleb Williams played under Lincoln Riley in a Texas Tech air raid type of system. And Lincoln Riley recruited me out of high school to go to college. I went to East Carolina for my first 2 years and learned under Lincoln Riley. He was my offensive coordinator. And I know how it was coached. And I'd imagine it's changed over time. It's been like 10 years. But I do know that the way that the Texas Tech / air raid system is ran is it's very spatially aware. You're playing a game of triangles and geometry with football. It's get guys in open space, read the key defender, rip it off of leverage. And that's how the game is taught, where in the NFL side, it's nickel defender, safeties rotation, blitzing, slide coverage, get your back out. Like, the game is played differently. It really feels like you're playing like a chess and checkers difference of a game. And so I watch his footwork, and I don't like want to judge Caleb too harshly on it, because I know that he will be coached to do it differently in the NFL. That's what they had to do to be successful in college. So footwork is a thing that you can learn, but I do think it slows down that year one acclimation, where you have a guy like CJ Stroud last year, his footwork was so good. And on tape, it was good. That's something that translates really well. And then I look at other guys, like a guy like Spencer Rattler has actually really good footwork right now. I've watched him watch his tape, and I'm like, wow, it looks like he is going to be doing the things and has been doing the things that he's going to be asked to do in rookie minicamp and training camp and all that stuff. And so Drake May is even further on the other side of the spectrum of, like, I think his footwork's so sloppy, but he makes these wow plays and kind of has that Josh Allen, like, gunslinger, whatever, coming out of college. But Drake May doesn't have that physical freak, like, outrun everybody, stiff arm everybody. He doesn't play like that, even though he's a big guy. So no, yeah. It's a little bit all over the place, but you can just kind of watch these guys and watch how they drop back before they're asked to throw the ball. What's their tempo? Do they look comfortable? Even if you don't know what a three-step, five-step, three and a hitch or reset, none of that stuff means, just watch them and their body language and their feet before they hitch. What do they look like? And I think over the course of a full season, you can see kind of where guys are going to be going into the NFL. But footwork can change and it can get better.
Yeah, I noticed a lot on Drake May's tape is like he was creating like his own pressure sometimes, mm-hmm. with the way he was like either sliding to the side that he was going to throw in the pocket, yeah. rather than just kind of staying, you know, where he needs to be.
Yeah.
So I'm curious for you, looking at all of these quarterbacks, and, you know, for me, in my mind, I'm looking at kind of the top six or seven guys. But if there's somebody outside of that you want to highlight, I would love to hear it. If you had to draft, I know, right?
Just heard it.
If you had to draft today, what order, because you said, you know, you're playing Dynasty Fantasy Football now. So what's kind of your rough order that you would feel comfortable taking these quarterbacks?
Yeah, so I look at it, and this is strictly fantasy perspective, Jaden Daniels has to be number one. Like, you look at how he plays the game, you look at a guy like Justin Fields, who on paper wasn't a great quarterback last year. When he's playing, he's scoring fantasy points. The running part of a quarterback's game is massive in fantasy, so I'm taking Jaden Daniels because he has the highest ceiling to be that guy. And then I'm taking Caleb Williams because obviously he's going to play early. He's going to have weapons around him. And I think Caleb Williams is probably going to have a better passing year than Jaden Daniels will, because his weapons right now look really good. He is playing in a division that's going to be tough. Like, that division's only getting better across the board. So, assuming he goes to the Bears.
Sure. I think we're all making that assumption.
I think that's a strong assumption. So I'm looking at those two people at those two spots. And then number three, like, I just don't think that Drake May is going to be producing enough, even if he goes top five, to play. Like, if he goes to New England, I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. Like, I would not. Not in year one. And maybe not year two or three.
Said that.
Like, I wouldn't do it.
I texted my buddy yesterday. I said, I wouldn't touch Drake May with a 10-foot pole.
There we go. That's we're
literally
just insane, dude.
Exactly what I said.
Yeah.
And that was after you put the video out, Garrett, of Drake May.
Yeah, of course. You
know. And, you know, I think you look at some of these other guys, like where I found the most value in my leagues was getting guys like Gardner Minshew and Sam Darnold and like some of these guys that I got last year in Dynasty that I'm like, if they get a situation at all, they're going to be there. And I'm in a two quarterback league, so you need depth at quarterback.
Absolutely.
Like, they're my quarterbacks 3-4, and then I have another five that's whatever. But like, yeah, I have Jordan Love and I have, who else is it? I think it's Lamar Jackson, my number one and number two quarterbacks in that league. But, like,
good.
You need like a Gardner Minshew type, whatever. I think Bo Nix can be a Gardner Minshew type where maybe he's not starting year one. Who knows? Draft could go crazy. He could go to the Broncos or something and be the guy right away. But I like a guy like Bo Nix that I think is really sharp. He plays the game well. He's accurate. He good decision maker, doesn't really throw interceptions. His footwork is good. Like, I'm looking at all the things that I know coaches really care about. If you're not going to get a top three guy talent-wise, like 1, 2, 3 in the draft, you want a guy like Bo Nix as a quarterback coach and as an offensive coordinator that you know you can talk to, you can see him process, you can see him get better, and you know he comes with this foundation of like footwork, timing, accuracy that you don't have to coach. That's really hard to coach when you're always like just trying to force it and you're running up on time.
Would you take Nix before Penix?
I think that obviously it depends on where they go in fantasy or in the draft to know where they're going to go in fantasy. But
I guess I meant from like an NFL draft standpoint,
NFL
like
draft.
They're both on the board, both on the board. Like,
I think I'm going to take Penix.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Penix isn't the sharpest footwork wise, but his arm talent is insane.
Like, probably the best in the draft.
Yeah. If I'm drafting as an NFL GM, not for fantasy right now, I'm going Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, Penix, Bo Nix, then May. Is what I'm. Oh, sorry, I forgot about JJ McCarthy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We haven't really talked about him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what are your general thoughts on McCarthy?
I think that he's, you know, he reminds me of a better version of Corral, from a few years ago. And I think Corral didn't even get a chance. I mean, he went to Carolina and that sucked. He got injured and their situation sucked. But like a guy like Matt Corral, I watched him in college. I watched kind of like Jared Stidham, like that kind of crop of guy. I see McCarthy as that crop of guy with more upside. He's a winner. He's really good on third downs. He's really good in the red zone. Like, he doesn't have the most volume, which people try to give him like whatever for. But in the critical situations and the most high pressure situations, he's the best quarterback in the draft. So
no doubt.
How do you weigh that stuff? It's like a weighted average, in my opinion. So I'll start that one all over again, though. If I'm drafting, I'm going Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, and then it is a toss-up between McCarthy and Penix for me, but I think that I'm going to go Penix because there are throws that he makes that I just don't think many guys in this draft can make. And the biggest thing that he does well is he pushes the vertical ball downfield with extreme accuracy. He's not just throwing it to a spot and hoping that guys are going to get there. He's like precision, putting back shoulders, putting up and aways, putting like inside seams where it's wrapping around defenders. Like, he can manipulate the football to the last second with how he throws. I mean, it's special. So yeah, I'm going to go
with that.
Three.
With that, I noticed that, especially outside the numbers, that was where he really seemed to thrive. Like, he obviously, yeah, most quarterbacks can do things over the middle, but the throws that he was able to make to the sidelines and yeah, outside the numbers,
those are the
just
hard
really,
throws.
Really impressive.
Yeah, yeah, like those are the hard ones. And I think another thing that fans and I guess people in general don't really think about is the hashes in college are so much wider than the hashes in the NFL. So a wide hash throw in college, to like throwing an out route to the field in college, like not many coaches ask their guys to do that. He was able to do that consistently with extreme accuracy, and that was an asset for their team. That throw in the NFL that he might be asked to make is going to be yards shorter. And yeah, yeah, you give a guy like that even closer space to make those throws. I mean, that's why the NFL is even more of a passing league, because this way that the spacing with the hashes is and the rules, I mean, he could go and just be a gunslinger from the get-go.
Yeah,
I would love for him to go and sit behind Stafford for a year.
Oh, he'd be nasty.
And that offense, that'd be great.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a chance he sticks with his OC and goes to Seattle, and he's in the same system once again.
Yeah. I mean, you look at him, some quarterbacks, you watch them play and you're like, okay, these guys, like, they're good distributors of the ball, but they really do need receivers to catch for them. Everybody needs a receiver. I look at him a little bit differently, like, dang, I really think he can go in and elevate receivers that you might not even hear about as much because of how accurate he is. There's just being able to off-place throws and just set receivers up for success. And he had the perfect matching with Adunze, dude. Like, the way that they... Yeah. Adunze mastered late hands, mastered like last minute reactions to create separation at the right time. And I think that's probably something you'd speak to as a former quarterback. There's nothing worse than a receiver being open too early and like not understanding saving space. And then the throws later, it's missed. Like, you have to be able to become open at the right time of the routes. And with a go ball, you see so many guys beat guys by like 4 or 5 yards, like right off the line, but then they wide into the sideline and they leave no space for the quarterback. Like, that stuff that fans look at, like, oh, the quarterback was late. Like, no, that's not how it's coached. You hold the safety, then you throw the ball. It's 42 to 44 yards on a go ball. Like, you just being open at the right time is something he mastered, and accuracy is something that Penix has mastered.
Well, we've asked a lot of questions and you've been awesome answering all of them, but one thing that is a little next to fantasy, though maybe not quite fantasy relevant, but I think is really interesting, is you got to obviously be in the film room with Aaron Rodgers, one of the greatest quarterbacks that we've ever seen, and Jordan Love, who at the time, you know, we might not have known where he was going to end up in the spectrum of things, this first round pick, but hasn't really gotten to play. And obviously this past season just had a fantastic season for the Green Bay Packers. So what was it like being in the film room with those guys? What are they like? Give us a little insight that we might not normally get to those players.
Yeah, it was definitely my favorite year of football. I only spent 1 year with the Packers, 2 off seasons with them, and without a doubt, the most fun I've ever had. And the game was fun again, like being in a room with guys that like you're actually friends with, and just, it didn't always feel like work. And like, there were work components to it, obviously, but it just felt like we were all trying to reach this common goal, support the number one guy in whatever way we could, and just be those guys for him. So the dynamic was really cool because Aaron's the guy. Jordan is obviously there to learn and to take as much as possible. And then there was me, where it's like, I'm not going to get many reps in practice, but when I do, I'm going to go out slinging. And then in the meeting room, my role was really like speak up when there's like things that need to be corrected on the like cut-ups, the drawings, like anything that was wrong, bring like fun to the room, bring memes, bring like just a lot of camaraderie type stuff. Like that was the role. And so for me, it's like, I get to go out to practice. I need to know the game plan. I need to know the defense. I need to make sure like the loose ends are tightened up when we get like the iPad drawings and stuff every day. Cause that gets from us to then the receivers and the tight ends, it gets dispersed. So if a split's wrong, a route's wrong, a tag is wrong, whatever, like I was very attentive to all those details. Sometimes it's probably interesting annoying.
That like that's the like responsibility that you take on at, in your role in the quarterback room. I guess I didn't know that you're asked to do that, or maybe you weren't even asked to do that. You just kind of took that on being a good teammate.
Yeah, it was definitely like a taken on thing. And I think especially for Aaron, how long he'd been playing, he didn't always feel like speaking up on stuff that was like the mundane whatever. And so I just felt like it became my responsibility of like, look, if a play is drawn wrong, if there's an opinion that I know he has that he doesn't necessarily want to get into on that day, like I felt very comfortable to be like, why are we doing it this way? Why do we look at it from this perspective? What about this that this other team's doing this way? So like I was very much doing that. And then for Jordan, his role was, look, soak up as much as you can from a future Hall of Fame quarterback and be ready if he gets hurt and all of that. So it's just cool how the dynamic of 1, 2, and 3 changes depending on, is the oldest guy the top dog? Is the youngest guy the starter and the old guy's the backup? Like every room is different. So that's how that room ended up shaking out.
I saw your clips you posted on Twitter, dude. You're slinging it around, man.
Appreciate it, dude. Thank you. Yeah, it was fun, man.
That's how's the connected franchise going?
Oh, man.
How many are you in?
I'm in one connected franchise, and I just traded for Aaron Rodgers to get him back with the Packers.
Nice.
I ended up winning the division year one, got first rounded in the playoffs, unfortunately, on a pretty skeptical play call, and we're in year two now just getting started. So,
dude, I used to be heavy in the Madden connected franchise, like online, I don't know, like 5 years ago.
It's a blast.
Madden Bomber League. Have you ever heard of them?
Mm-mm.
Okay. No. They did like commentary for the games. Like there'd be people like announcing and stuff. And
that's amazing.
Good times.
That's awesome.
Well, Jared, any other questions that you want to ask Kurt before we get him out of here?
We talked about quarterbacks, and obviously we had you on to talk about quarterbacks. Have you gotten into breaking down the receivers at all?
I actually just pushed out an Adunze breakdown. It was an all-22 game.
Okay.
I think it was Texas. I don't know who it was, actually. I think it might have been Texas. Hard to remember. But he had a big game like he normally does. And just trying to break down like what type of plays he was asked to make. What, like how did his 100 or whatever yards on 8 catches and a touchdown actually play out? So broke that one down. And I honestly think between him, Neighbors, and like Marvin Harrison Jr., I think Adunze is the safest, like most... you can move him around all over the field a little more, where I think Marvin Harrison's going to be like a true X, maybe a little bit of a Z. And then I look at Neighbors, like I think Neighbors should be a slot guy that just goes crazy. And so if I'm some of these teams in the draft, where these guys go really matters. Like if Neighbors ends up going to the Giants, I don't love that because then he's asked to be the guy as an X, where I think he should actually go to Chicago and be an F receiver in the slot and complement like a DJ Moore and a Keenan Allen. Like I think his value is even better there. And so I look at some of these guys fit wise and I'm like, same thing with Marvin Harrison. If Marvin Harrison goes to the Cardinals, he is the only guy. So he's going to end up getting doubled a lot. And so I don't know. I think all three of those guys have unique skill sets, but they all play the game so different. And it's hard to like even like rank them in a way because it's like, where do they end up? How are they going to be used? That's what matters more so with the receivers than anything.
Interesting. Yeah, that's I mean, if you had to rank them, what order would you have those top three guys in?
I'd probably go Adunze 1 just because his versatility, and then Marvin Harrison 2 because I do think he could be like an AJ Green type of guy, even though AJ Green didn't have a great career. Like when he was balling, and then Neighbors at 3, just a little smaller, but like needs a good scheme fit. I don't look at Neighbors in the same light that I do Jamar Chase in a way. I look at him more like an Amon-Ra St. Brown. So that gives context to how I see them.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. We're breaking down receivers right now on the main podcast. So I was just curious how you had him. I haven't, Garrett and I, we do like a film grade every year. Like we break down all 22, put out a grade for them. We've been doing it for the past 5 years, and
that's awesome.
I haven't done a Dunze yet, so I know Garrett's really high on him. So I'm excited to get into
I'm
his
loving
tape.
Everything you're saying here, because I do have Marvin Harrison first, then Odunze, and then Neighbors. But dude, all three of these guys, fantastic receivers. Like I would put the three of them up against the top three receivers from almost any class over the past like 20 some years. Like,
100%.
Just a fantastic group.
Yeah, this is, I mean, dude, if teams like the Giants, the Cardinals that like really don't have anybody anymore, grab two or three receivers this draft and just be happy with it, because there's guys that are so deep, second, third, fourth round guys. Like, I mean, there's a lot of studs in this draft, and I mean, just receivers in general in college are getting better over like the general like average of who they are. It's getting better every year. So hopefully those guys can shine this year.
Awesome. Yeah, for sure. So what, well, Kirk, real quick, Gary, I know you're getting ready to, what pick do you have in your dynasty rookie draft? You know?
Ooh, I can go look. Let's see.
If you have the first overall pick, I know you said you would pick Jaden Daniels before Caleb, but just given the consensus where I think probably everyone's going to end up taking, assuming they play in a super flex league, Caleb Williams first overall. I mean, would you say people should trade out of that pick to maybe trade down to get Jaden Daniels instead and pick up like extra draft capital?
I would do it during the draft for sure, not prior. You know how like if you get during the draft, people just start salivating and they want to make big moves. I think you can take advantage of a guy that's like, I'm going to get Caleb. He's going to be the guy. I actually traded away my first two rounds. So my first pick isn't until round three.
He was all in, baby.
Eight. Yeah, I went all in this year. My team, my dynasty team in a 12-man league is stacked right now.
All right, let's hear it, man. A little brack session.
Let's go hop in the bag real quick.
Let's do it.
All right. So the famous move that I made was I traded away Trevor Lawrence right before the demise for Jordan Love, George Pickens, and Cortland Sutton. And a fourth round pick. I got a
That's a great trade. Yeah.
All of the talk was, is Jordan going to be the guy? Is this and that? Like, I'm like, no, dude, his receivers played like shit in the first half of the year. They're going to figure it out. And then lo and behold, he helped me get to the playoffs. So right now my starters, Lamar Jackson at quarterback, Jordan Love at quarterback, Derrick Henry, who's in Baltimore now, Saquon Barkley, who's in Philly now, both guys that I got like traded for low.
Nice.
I have Devonta Smith, who should have a better year, Debo Samuel, who if they get rid of Ayuk, should get some more burn.
He'll feast, yeah.
I have Pickens, who has at least an upgrade at quarterback, I'd say, this year. I'm lacking in the tight end department. I do have Taysom Hill. Who knows? He could put up 20, he could put up zero. I have Pacheco as a flex running back, and I have Calvin Ridley as a flex receiver. And then my bench is Darren Waller, who was my starter, Dontavian Wicks, who was a stud pickup. I have Brandon Powell with Minnesota, who is going to be, I think he's going to have a better year in the flex. Cortland Sutton's on the bench. Jerome Ford is on the bench. And then I have Gardner Minshew and Sam Darnold, who both were off of waivers last year that are now presumably the starters until further notice. So we got some depth. I do want to make some moves to get into the receiver game for sure in this fantasy draft. So I'm going to see what I can do to get up into the second or first round, but I like where we're at right now.
That's a solid team. Yeah, you're definitely competing.
Yep.
Love it, love it. We'll have to, we might have to sneak you an invite here or there, see if we can get in Dynasty League number two.
Hey now, don't tempt me with a good time. Don't tempt me with a good time, I'm in.
Awesome, love it, love it. Well, Kurt, seriously, dude, thank you so much for coming on. It was a blast having you on, getting to pick your brain, talk about these players, the film process. You were an awesome guest.
Thanks, man, I appreciate it. Hopefully the episode crushes.
I'm sure will. Anything you want to plug before we get you out of here?
Oh, man. Definitely want to plug Pocket Presence. We have all of our stuff on YouTube has kind of been where we've pivoted to have everything visual, because a lot of what I talk about is visual. So Pocket Presence YouTube, it's been growing. We have all the breakdowns there for all the quarterbacks, top six, starting to do the receivers. And we have a three-way receiver, kind of like a reaction to who they are coming up soon next week. But yeah, Pocket Presence on all socials, and we're building it with Sleeper.
Awesome, dude. Man. Well, appreciate you coming on, man.
Of course.
Really, really do.
Yep. See you guys next time.
All right. We'll see you later.